Women's Ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College.
Hi, I'm Lily Watson.
I'm Miriam Abrams.
And I'm Maria Lambert.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of Ordained Women, a feminist group working for women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Ordained Women gained national notoriety for their direct action events in October 2013 and April 2014, and then again when their spokesperson, Kate Kelly, was excommunicated by the LDS Church in June of 2014.
A decade after all of this, we talk with some of the women who helped organize Ordained Women and its direct action events, and we learn about the impact of this group on their lives and on the LDS Church, an organization that still does not ordain women.
Each episode of our series investigates a different topic, and today we're going to look at how the Ordained Women movement organized for their cause. We're going to ask board members Nancy Ross, Hannah Wheelwright, Lori Winder Stromberg, and Joanna Smith about their role in organizing, the sorts of challenges and disagreements that came with organizing, and the ways in which digital organizing differed from activism in person.
While all of these women worked together on the board, they each had their own roles and type of organizing that they gravitated towards. Ordained Women began with a groundbreaking website where Mormons could submit their testimonies about their support for women's ordination. They modeled the website after the LDS Church's own I Am a Mormon marketing campaign, using personal narratives to reach a broad audience and thrust women's ordination from the shadows into the public discourse. Lori Winder Stromberg played a crucial part in recruiting women to submit their testimonies to the Ordained Women website.
So some of the first people I approached to put profiles up, because we had talked about not going not putting everything up online until we had at least 20 to 24 profiles. We needed to have a critical mass. And I approached the women, the Exponent 2 board members that I knew, and it was amazing. Several of them came on board and were willing, had the courage to do profiles early on. And because they had cred in the Mormon feminist community, it really helped Ordained Women immediately it helped Ordained Women.
Joanna Smith handled logistics.
Yeah, so I really was a recruiter. So I was a missionary for Ordained Women in that I really tried to get things happening. I was a logistical person. I like to dot my I's and cross my T's. So I worked with one other board member again, mainly to do things to like getting permitting, fundraising. I did a ton of the fundraising. I was involved heavily in creating it from a grassroots movement to a 501(c)(3), the legality part of that. I created all the merch. We had a whole bunch of merch. We had stress balls, we had umbrellas, we had pins, we had necklaces, we had things like that.
Just one example of Nancy Ross's roles was for one of the direct actions.
I was at home managing social media for that event. I would say there was a tremendous amount of discussion and planning of details. And there was just so much planning. Like, you cannot overemphasize the degree to which like all the details were planned and like everybody had a multitude of roles.
Within any social movement, members' opinions will inevitably differ. We asked the board members how Ordained Women members' opinions varied on the goal of their movement and how that potentially affected their organizing. Ross told us the following.
While the name of the organization was Ordained Women, that there was no shared vision of how the ordination of what we wanted with regard to the ordination of women. Not at all. Not even a little bit.
Hannah Wheelwright explained that one point of disagreement was around the balance between faithful and secular appearances of their activism.
Like, how much should Ordained Women actually design actions? Like how much should our direct activism like look and feel Mormon? Because ideally it should. We all agreed like the most effective religious activism will be activism that doesn't look like that. The like two mainstream Mormons in the church will feel faithful and right. And that was tricky because it does not, like, as a faithful Mormon woman, it did not feel like right to be like, I believe women should be ordained. Like, that is not in the Mormon, like, that just doesn't fit with the Mormon culture. But a lot of difficulties came from the fact that several people involved in ordaining women were, like, not people who were, like, actively believing, like Lori Winder Stromberg, who is, like, she describes herself as, like, she's never had the God gene. She's, like, been involved since the 70s in activism, but she's like, I don't believe in God. I would not be able to be ordained, you know?
Meanwhile, Stromberg herself believed that they didn't have too many significant differences in opinion in ordained women due to their common cause.
Already by forming that group, we were very clear that we were going to be activists and that we were pro-ordination. So it seems to me you already self-select the people who are going to be involved in ordained women. Do you see what I'm saying? So there wasn't a huge divide about, oh, I can't, you know.
But Stromberg did acknowledge Wheelwright's point.
He certainly argued about what constitutes appropriate religious as opposed to secular or political action. We still have questions about that.
Beyond political disagreements, Smith mentioned how members' personalities sometimes clashed.
But as far as, like, different personalities, it was fine because like there was lots that don't, I'm a big personality. I'm a big loudmouth, I swear, and I will go directly to you with what I have a problem with. And some people in Mormonism are super not like that. But I learned to value the way, like, the strength that they had, and they learned to value mine. Like, I didn't feel like it was catty at all. I didn't feel like it was headaches of politics at all. At one point, someone came up and spit on me at Temple Square. And, like, everybody was experiencing those types of things. So the personality differences kind of go away when you're wiping each other's, when you're literally taking a tissue and wiping spit off each other.
Smith also felt a major difference in opinion on organizing style was driven by anxieties around ordained women's perception and intended audience.
So it was difficult when we had board meetings, and all of those conversations were like, well, this feels too rebellious, or this feels like, one of my things was always like, I want to light frickin' purple fireworks and purple smoke bombs when the prophet dies. And they were like, that feels too rebellious. That feels too out there. That feels too breaking the law. Like, so we had to, like, really rein in so that everything was structured. A lot of people wanted to do a banner drop in the conference center where we all sat in a row. And then we unveiled a banner that said ordained women that was huge, 10 feet by 15 feet, like, drop our logo. And again, people were like, that feels like a protest. So what are we going to do instead? So we toned down and toned down and toned down to be palpable, because we were already being accused of so much terrible things. Mm-hmm. I mean, people accused us of eating babies. Like, it's absurd, like, the amount of, like, things that we were accused of. So we knew we'd be accused of the worst no matter how tame we did it, but it was like, how do we do it in a way that speaks to who we want to speak to? And our target audience was other Mormon women, young girls like you, that were coming of age and recognizing that they needed to be able to see themselves, and then the brethren.
Wheelwright summed up their difficulties with finding a critical balance.
But I think it's always been a difficult thing for the organization to try to find places to, like, do activism and direct actions in a way that feel Mormon, but also that are, like, meaningful and push progress along or push a conversation, because there's only so much progress that you can have when you're still trying to speak the voice of, like, inequality, you know?
While there were differences in opinion regarding the organizing goals and efforts of the movement, there were also minor differences felt by the members regarding digital versus in-person organizing. Smith explained the newfound power of digital organizing.
So the digital age, like, connected us together in a way that we hadn't been able to be connected. So instead of just being like, oh, I'm the weird feminist in my ward, it was, I now know all the other weird feminists in all the wards. And that was beautiful.
Stromberg agreed.
The internet was a game changer. I mean, a game changer in terms of organizing and activism.
That being said, Ross pointed out how their methods didn't always differ between digital and in-person efforts.
So there were these different like Facebook pieces, these Facebook organizational pieces. There were these website pieces, and that was like our digital component. And just like when we showed up in real life or in direct action, trying to appear this like very Mormon woman, very faithful. So I think that at that time, that was true of most of the people who were organizing. A lot of people who were organizing that time were attending church. They were involved in their local communities. And we wanted that to be reflected in the work that we did, because that was one of the main charges against groups like ours, which is that, oh, well, we're not faithful. And if you're not faithful in Mormonism, you have no social capital.
Even so, Smith emphasized how positive digital organizing was for ordained women.
Other people in our ward were hating on us. And so the digital space saved us. Because we weren't strung up individually on a cross individually, we were galvanized together. I traveled years later to Sweden, and a woman came up to me and was like, I would dedicate music with you. I mean, she came and found us when we were in Sweden. And we had a party of 8 of us that were all profile holders on the banks of the water at midnight, having cheese and crackers, toasting to how phenomenal this space was. So we created our own ward, and then we created our own stake, and then we created our own districts. And that digital space allowed us to do that in a way nothing else had ever. And it's what created us, and then it's what saved us in the end.
For all of the small differences in these women's roles in the movement, their views on the balance between faithful and secular activism, their personalities, and how they engaged in digital organizing, ordained women ultimately united them in their fight for women's ordination in the LDS Church.
In this moment in time of hope for the movement and its future, these women worked together across borders, both geographical and ideological, with their initial digital organizing culminating in their first direct action at Temple Square, which you will hear about in the next episode.
That concludes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Joanna Smith, Nancy Ross, Hannah Wilright, and Lori Winder-Stromberg for interviewing with our class.
Also thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning, Research, and Technology team, and thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.